Hi, we're so happy you're here, and we are so excited to tell you about an awesome wedding planning resource that we have created just for you.
In March of 2021, we launched the Big Wedding Planning Masterclass, a digital course designed with you in mind. Any budget, any type of wedding, at any phase of wedding planning.
We spent a year creating this interactive course. It includes unlimited access, all of our templates, spreadsheets, timelines, checklists, and pro tips. Everything is downloadable and customizable, and we walk you through it step by step with video tutorials and screen shares.
We threw it all into this course. There's no way you won't get something out of it. We're so sure, we've included a 30-day money-back guarantee.
We're so excited to share this course with you and to help you plan your wedding our way.
So go to www.thebigweddingplanningmasterclass.com for more information and to sign up and to purchase.
If you listen to our podcast, then you know that we talk about money a lot. Weddings cost a lot of money, and we talk about how you're going to spend it and what your expectations might be. We know it can be stressful. We know it's expensive. We get it. We're here to help. And today we wanted to take a broader look at planning, wedding planning and financial planning, life planning together. So when Dan Hines reached out to us about being on the podcast, he emailed us and said, "As a financial coach, I help engaged couples and newlyweds get on the same page when it comes to money. I teach them to focus on honest communication and planning ahead." He wrote a guide called How to Talk About Money with Your Spouse. His business is called Adulting with Money, and we think he's a perfect fit for our listeners.
The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen, learn, plan that wedding.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, a show for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Michelle Martinez.
And I'm Christy Matthews. Thank you for listening. Now's when you say thank you.
No, I'm not going to do it.
You're not going to do it. Okay, good.
I was going to try very hard not to do it.
That's awesome. We're trying to break habits here on the podcast today.
I'm going to say, hey, Christy, what's up?
What's up, dude? Yeah, we should keep that. I like that. We'll go straight into what's up, dude,
hey,
after the
up,
intro
dude?
From now on. What's it going on in your life today?
Natural. Well, my kids are on spring break and, can you see on Skype? My fingernails are neon pink.
I was going to comment about that.
It's cute, right?
Yeah.
I never paint my nails. Nice. My son is at work with my husband, and my daughter and I had a mani-pedi.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you something about spring break and prepare yourself. It's going to blow your mind.
All right.
Your kids are going to want you to feed them 3 to 4 times a day.
God, I know.
Yeah. For the whole time. I just wanted to let you know, because for me, that was like a big shock.
Like, I need to
and
have
our spring
lunch
break was 2 weeks
ago.
At breakfast, they will ask you what's for dinner. So just wanted you to know that. And now you can prepare yourself, maybe like get a menu up on the wall or something so they know. And then you can avoid some questions, but prepare for comments.
I thought I hated packing lunches, but now I'm like, oh, can I just pack them a lunch and just hand it to them or just put it out with a note like eat this at 12 o'clock?
We ate a lot of granola bars in the car. I know that. And I just called it a meal.
Like, trying to do whatever I can do not to feel guilty that they're having too much screen time, because it's like, well, what am I supposed to do? I've got to edit the podcast. I've got to network. I've got to do social media.
And you want to make sure they don't kill each other. Yes. Yesterday, my kids were like, Mom, can we just play on the trampoline? And I was like, no, watch your iPads.
Why can't they plan the trampoline?
Because I was in my office for literally, it was like 30 minutes that I had to be in my office on a call.
Oh. Do you have to watch them?
No, the way my kids play on the trampoline, it's like the Thunderdome from a Mad Max movie, and they wrestle each other to the death. And if I'm not at least by a window to see who's strangling who, you know, something could go one step too far.
Stop killing your brother! It's not okay! Oh, is one of them in there? Mm. Is one of them coming in the closet?
Okay, he backed away, I think. Okay. I gave him the face, everyone. Okay. So yeah, that's spring break. You have to feed them. Make sure they don't kill each other. Don't feel bad about the iPad time. You got to do what you got to do.
Period. End of story.
Parenting 101 on the podcast today.
Yeah, we need a separate podcast just for this shit. Uh-oh. She's going to go kill him right now.
That was a cat, actually. Okay.
Oh, and the cat.
Okay, we're good. Okay. We're good. I think all creatures, big and small, have come in here now. It's only been 3 minutes of recording.
Great.
Great.
All right. So, all right. So no easy segue into money from this point.
If we had more money, we'd have nannies.
Oh, good one. Yes. Yes. If we had money, we would have nannies.
Yes. Hello. We have a guest today. Actually, he's been standing by through this through this intro. We're all recording in our closets. It looks like
kids?
Michelle.
No kids yet. We've got a 12-year-old Doberman, but she's pretty easy.
That's why you're not being interrupted. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome to the podcast.
Good for you, buddy. You really made a good impression already.
So smug with your no kids.
So, Dan Hines on the show today in the closet with TBWPP. Welcome, Dan.
Welcome, and thank you.
Yes, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
For your time. Well, we would love, we've told our listeners a little bit about you. We asked for some questions, but please tell us what makes you the expert.
Yeah, what makes you the expert,
yeah,
Dan?
Just well, like that. I'm just awesome. That's what makes me the expert. That's Excellent. The short answer. But Excellent. I guess if you want the long answer, you know, I've been a financial coach for over 5 years now, and I've helped newlyweds, engaged couples, married couples with kids, single moms, individuals, young and old. But, you know, early on when I out of college, my first career was actually as a financial advisor. So I was, you know, selling the insurance and selling the investments. And it wasn't really quite the career for me, but I still love helping people make decisions on money and get on the same page. So I guess I'm just here today because after listening to a lot of your guys' episodes, I've realized that when it comes to the wedding planning process, and, you know, I'm not an expert in that process. I've only had to do it once. And even then, my wife and my mother-in-law did most of it anyway. But, you know, listening to a lot of your episodes, there's a lot of overlap. When it, you know, as your listeners listen to your advice of coming together and working together and communicating on planning a wedding, a lot of that overlaps with the budgeting process and working together with money.
Yes, it does.
And when we talked as kind of the intake, you and I wanted to make sure that the things we were saying about budgeting or, you know, even just planning and the benefits of Excel spreadsheets and any of that would sort of coincide well
yes.
with what you were going to be talking about so that we have kind of the same place to start from. And one of my first questions for you, because I had to look up financial coach, and I
right?
think that's because my husband and I had looked into working with a financial advisor through some of the companies that we have some stocks in through his work. And this all feels very like adult-y to me. So I looked up coach, but if you could just give me a quick breakdown, just like Michelle and I do when it comes to like wedding planner, consultant, coordinator, day of, designer, architect, mm-hmm. venue planner. There's a lot of different names for different jobs. So give us the breakdown with all the things that you are not, and that leaves what you are.
Sure, sure. I guess the best analogy I've come up with so far is that if you look at health, you know, you could have a doctor or you could have a personal trainer. And so when it comes to the finance world, I'm more on the personal trainer side of things. Is, you know, I'm not looking for a lifetime relationship with you and your partner if we're working together. I'm more of a professor that I'm trying to teach you a skill that you can use for the rest of your life. And so when I say financial coach, I'm here to be a friend, an accountability partner, and I'm helping you and your partner to get on the same page with money and to learn a new skill that you can use forever. But it doesn't mean that we have to work together forever. Whereas a financial advisor, you know, that's someone that you want to help you as you're raising kids and thinking about retirement. With a 20-year plan. Yeah, the life insurance, like they're really good at that, and you really should have a financial advisor for that, but that's not quite what I do. Once we figure out how you can give them money to invest, then that's kind of where we end.
Okay, so it could be like a 3-month, 4-month, I'm just throwing that out there, like almost kind of like an intervention. People, I know not everyone that comes to you is a mess, but people could come to you and be like, we're a total mess. We mm-hmm. need your help to clean this shit up and then get on the right track. And you work with them, you know, throughout that time. And then when it's time to be like, fly away, children, fly yes. out of the nest. You're on your own. I've given you the skills and the tools and the plan. And then now you can do it yourself. The idea.
Yeah, yeah. And including that is the confidence in changing the plan, because in the end, that skill is making decisions no matter what it is you want or what life throws at you. So, you know, that personal trainer, they can teach you how to lift weights and what to do for your diet and how to run right. But eventually, you know, you kind of get used to it and you can like, I got this, you know, I can do this on my own, but thank you.
Michelle, when you interviewed Dr. Fossey, one of our favorite episodes, I feel like, to do. Dan, you mentioned this episode when you first reached out to us. We talked to her a lot about couples coming to her before they're married and the idea of like, what maybe we need to talk a little bit about your background with sex or the way you were raised or what words you use or, you know, maybe
what your expectations
experience.
Are.
Yeah. What yeah. are your expectations for this partnership? And
yeah,
she said that sometimes people sit on her couch and she knows they feel more confident to bring things up because she's in the room, where if they were just the two of them, they would just stare at each other and be like, I'm embarrassed or I don't know how to say this. So the idea is that kind of brought these two together was that she talked a lot about communication pre-marriage and like laying the foundation for a good habit to be in as you go on with life together. And you talked to me a lot about communication too. Do you find that people need a little hand holding, maybe a little pep talk to get into it? Or like, what's the deal with the communication and you being a coach?
Yeah, communication is key. It's one of the first things I do with my clients in my couples. And, you know, I talk about this in my ultimate guide as well, is that really the first thing you need to do is to just sit down and have a conversation. It's really fun. Well, I guess I find it fun because it's interesting to see when I get a couple on a Skype call or if we are sitting together at their dinner table and I ask the wife the question or the husband a question and they start to answer and I see the reaction of the partner where maybe they're hearing this for the first time or it's something that was surprising to them. But it never really goes terribly. It's just interesting to see how they react. And I pick up on that to say, okay, well, let's talk about this a little bit deeper and figure out, okay, how does that relate to what you guys want as a family? Now that you're together or you're about to be together, you know, what are your goals as individuals? But then how are we going to combine those now that you're going to become a family?
I find some people do not like to talk about money. Like it's like it's taboo. Like, you know, how much people make, you know, at their jobs, you know, how much they bought that house for, what they can afford. For me, like the way my husband and I do it, like I have like my spreadsheet, I do the bills, but you know, but he's like kind of manages things because I'm not so good at it. I'm not good at saying no. But I find myself getting defensive if he's like kind of looking through stuff and he'll be like, okay, so wait, what did you buy at Target? Because he'll like categorize things and he'll mm-hmm. be like, okay, wait, what'd you buy at Target that you spent like $100 and I'm like, what? I just, you know, what do you want me? What do you want from me?
Oh no.
Sometimes I find myself doing that. And like my mother's like that. She does not like to talk about money. She thinks anybody who mm-hmm. talks about inheritances or anything like that, like, oh my God, you know, how dare they speak? So do you have people, I would assume, especially couples who kind of have different thought processes on that, come to you? And do you have to kind of like sometimes pull that out of them or help them communicate?
Yeah, I help pull that out of them. You know, there's one couple that's in my mind that, you know, in a lot of the couples that I work with, they're already a good team. They're already a good couple, but for some reason, money is still kind of a sticking point, or it's something that they sit down and they want something like saving up for a house or getting a master's degree or trying to get out of debt. And they just kind of talk in circles and nothing ever really happens. And so when I start to talk with couples, I really just kind of dig into, you know, what is it that you want and why do you want it? To you know, as Simon Sinek does in his TED Talk, is you want to start with why. You know, what is the underlying feelings here? And we don't have to go too deep. I mean, when it comes to saving up for a house, it's sometimes it can be just as easy as I hate renting. I'm tired of moving. I just want to have a house and a garage and a yard. And that's usually, you know, good enough. And so when we're starting to talk and pull these out of people, I do dig a little bit deeper, but it's just deep enough to get that nugget of truth. And sometimes it's a little bit uncomfortable, but I tell you what, everyone's a lot happier when that's done, that they get it off their yeah. chest and then they've been honest.
Mm-hmm. And Michelle mentioned that she does the bills and has the spreadsheets, and then her husband maybe is more of the big picture, you know, and has the apps yeah. and you're looking at specific
savings
expenses.
And yeah, retirement and all that.
And with wedding planning, we do talk about the distribution of labor and how we, you know, we think maybe too often the women or the bride or one partner in the couple does the majority of the work, and that's really great for the couples that works for. But sometimes the other partner feels like boxed out or like, you're not giving me all the information and I didn't sign off on that. And when I talked to you, Dan, I wanted to see what kind of things you see with that, because it's not always going to be 50-50, but we're all about, you know, equality and inclusion on the podcast.
Oh, sure.
And I wanted to see, like, when these couples come to you, specifically couples in romantic relationships, what do you see on that front, and how do you help them feel okay about the way they're doing it, or tweak it so that it's like, okay, one person is doing all this work and actually feels really resentful about it and defensive potentially. So I don't know. I guess, like, what's your take?
Yeah, well, it goes back to communication. You know, what I like to say is I'm fine with the work being 90-10 as long as the decisions are 50-50. Is that if you're coming together and you're talking about what the plan is and you both put your stamp of approval on that plan and you move forward, you know, it really only takes one person to log on to a budgeting app or open the spreadsheet and click around and do things. And so, you know, I'm a nerd about this stuff, so I do most of the work with my wife, but I don't make any major decisions, you know, hundreds of dollars decisions without her. Some of the smaller things, it's like, yeah, I don't need permission to go pay the electric bill or put some of the things on auto pay. But when it comes to the couples, I really start to look for which of you has that strength when it comes to dealing with technology, or maybe the patience to deal with technology. Because there was one couple that the wife really wanted to budget. She really wanted to get going. She really wanted to get organized. But she was also a nurse. And so she would come home every day. She was super tired. And they had two young kids. And she wanted to do the budgeting. So she kind of put herself in charge. And the husband just said, okay, you know, happy wife, happy life. We'll definitely get started. But I looked over at his desk and I saw it was neat and organized, and he had notebooks, and he looked like he played World of Warcraft, which, if you're not familiar, is a big online game that has a lot to do with resource management and teamwork. And I could just tell that he was more of an organized person. And so what we did is we switched to him becoming the one who controls the budget, but helps keep it organized,
manages
make sure
it.
Everything's, yes, manages it, but still the budget meetings have to be 50-50, is you both have to agree what the next plan is before the person who does the work goes and clicks the buttons.
Yeah, decision-making being pretty full disclosure between the two.
Yes,
once you start to hide what you're spending or what your debt is, that's really hard to get out of, I would think.
Yeah, yeah. If you're worried about your partner hiding money from you, that's not my wheelhouse. That's someone else's wheelhouse to help you with that.
let's talk about financial planning at the same time as wedding planning, which is what we think and encourage all of our listeners to do, what we think they're doing. So where does an engaged couple start? Let's say they're like a year out from their wedding date. They've set the date. They've kind of decided on a budget, and they're both 28 years old. Like, what advice or rules or basics do you talk to this couple about to begin?
Sure. So I guess as far as the timeline goes, when it comes to budgeting and managing money, is there's a lot of little things here and there that come up. And unfortunately, when it comes to getting used to a new habit, you've got to have repetition. But the financial world really only works on a monthly basis. So you can do one monthly budget and see how it goes. And then you tweak it and you do a second one and you see how it goes. And you tweak a third one and then see how that goes. So it takes at least 3 to 4 months to really get used to working out a lot of those kinks. You'll be happy with it and you'll be comfortable with it after 3 to 4 months, but it takes about that much time. So if the wedding is only 3 months away, just wait till after the wedding. You know, have your happy day, have the honeymoon, and then get back to financial planning after that's all done, because you're going to need the time, the energy, and the mental space to handle all that stuff. So if you're a year out, that's still a good enough time away that if you want to get started, you'll get used to it before a lot of stuff starts coming up and you really just your mental state, you're like, oh, it's coming up. That's far enough out.
And when you say get used to it, the budget, you're talking about whatever they've agreed upon, but something like we allow ourselves $300 a month for restaurants and movies, and we're going to put away 10% of both our paychecks, and we're going to chip away at our credit card debt by a little bit each month. Some kind of plan, maybe written down or agreed upon, that's the actual budget of both people's income versus expenditures. That's the basics you're talking about tweaking?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's also, when it comes to the budget, you're also predicting the future to say, well, how much do we actually spend on food? And then a lot of people are surprised at how much they spend at Starbucks when they actually add everything up. So, you know, that's one of those things where there's just going to be, you're guessing a lot of things, and you've just got to try. You have your best educated guess and see how it goes. But along with not only having the budget, but it's also you're trying to learn how to use a new app or use a new software. And there's a lot of, well, what if this happens? Or when this happens, what did we do then? And so that's where I get a lot of emails to say, okay, this happened, now what do we do? And so there's little things every once in a while that they can start to add up and they can start to weigh on your mind. But like I said, once you fix the problem once, you're like, oh, okay, now I know how to do it the next time. And it takes just about 3 to 4 months to work out all those little kinks to be comfortable to say, okay, yeah, now I get it.
What about joint bank accounts? If we are two single people coming together to get married and then spend the rest of our lives together,
yes.
Michelle and I, we're going to get married and we both have our own jobs and we have our own bank accounts. We've always done it our own way. Maybe I have a little bit of debt. Maybe she has a little bit of family trust fund. I mean, is it just black and white? Like, yes, you should have joint bank accounts how do you approach that?
Can I just say I did a little poll on our Instagram story asking in preparation for this. I asked, once you're married, will your earnings all go together in one account? And 55% of people said no, 45% of people said yes. So I thought that was interesting.
Okay. Yeah, and that's exactly what I found. I wrote an article and put it on Reddit, and it made it to the front page of Reddit, mainly because people were debating this fact, is to say, should you do all joint accounts, Or should you be completely separate, or should you be somewhere in between where maybe there's a joint account where the mortgage comes out of and all the income goes out of and things of that nature? And to be quite honest, I consider that logistics, and it almost doesn't matter. There's happy marriages all over the spectrum, and you can be married and happy no matter how you do it. And that's because it really starts with that communication. Is that if you are budgeting together and you're talking about it together, what money, where it comes out of, doesn't matter nearly as much anymore. Because as a couple, as a family, as a team, you just get used to how that works. And a second reason is that, especially with all the apps that are out there today, if they can electronically, well, they can electronically link to your bank accounts, the software doesn't care who owns a bank account, and it doesn't care really where it is. It can all be organized into one space. So, you know, if the two of you were to get married together, I would say at the very least start budgeting together and get like one budgeting app that you both have the username and both have the password to, so you can both go in and look at stuff or fix stuff or change stuff. And that app can do all of the hard work for you. It can go to whatever bank account, wherever it is. And that's how my wife and I started out. We had separate everything, of course, because we were separate adults, and we didn't really join everything together until about 2 years after we were married. And that's because we bought a house and we moved, and there was a bank around the corner. And so we just moved everything to that bank. And while we moved everything, we made one joint checking account and one joint savings account. And it really, it was just convenience more than anything. Our budgeting was doing fine. So it made my life a little bit easier because I'm the one that does the organizing. But other than that, it really wasn't that big of a deal.
Okay. What are some of these apps? Yeah,
Jinx.
We need to know.
We use Mint. It's free.
That's what we use.
Yep, it's free and it's good enough. I use it as the gateway drug for budgeting because it gets people it gets people started. You can learn the basics. You can keep things organized. I mean, it's being that it's free, it's not perfect, and sometimes it can be hard to fix things. So if you want to move to a different app that you pay for, some of my favorites that I've tried before. Our YNAB, which is short for You Need a Budget.com, Envelopes with an M as in Mary, Envelopes. There's Every Dollar. I think Good Budget has one as well. So there's a lot of good ones out there. So if you just kind of want to get started and test the waters, sign up for Mint. And then when you're ready for something better, something more, go pay for a better app.
Okay. We'll put all the list out those on our show notes too. We do have a listener question, but before that, give us some good news, you know, something that you have to reassure couples with, like getting this can all be kind of overwhelming and kind of scary, like we said. So,
yes. I think the good news is there is no perfect way to budget, so you're not doing it wrong. When you get started, it's absolutely fine to find your own way and to find a way that works for you. Cause I know a lot of couples are worried about, you know, if I'm really stingy on one thing and my partner is really free spirited on another way, how are we going to work that out? And the answer to that is that you'll find your way. I mean, it's really, you love each other. You're a team, you're married. You'll definitely find a way. So when I work with a couple, I try to laugh and I chuckle as much as possible because yes, it's money and yes, it's serious, but you'll figure it out. It's not as bad as you think.
We have found a really awesome way for you to make your wedding even more unique and memorable. Songfinch, who is sponsoring this episode, is a personalized gifting company that brings stories, feelings, and memories to life through one-of-a-kind songs. You can create the perfect first dance song or tell your parents how much they mean to you in a song for your dance with them on your wedding day, or a beautiful love song for your wedding website. There are so many possibilities, and they have a community of over 300 songwriters and musicians who are sure to create a song that represents one of the best days of your life. There's two different ways to create a personalized song with Songfinch. One is you can build from an existing foundation. So you browse and you select the perfect music, vocalist, and chorus that speaks to your heart. You share your stories to help shape the song's lyrics, and your selected vocalist writes and records two new personalized verses to make the song yours. Or
Share your stories to help shape the song's lyrics. Select your song's mood, genre, and vocalist type to shape the song's sound. And they will select the perfect songwriter to record your one-of-a-kind song from scratch. Songfinch is offering our listeners a 10% discount for a song from scratch. Use promo code BIGWEDDING for 10% off your personalized song from scratch. Again, promo code BIGWEDDING for 10% off your personalized song from scratch. Thank you, Songfinch.
All right, so we chose this question from Michelle C. Hi, Michelle. I really like your name.
Easy.
And Michelle writes, "Hey, ladies, I've been obsessively listening in the car during my commute for a little while now, and I'm so grateful you both exist. Thanks so much for sharing all your knowledge and providing an outlet for me while my wedding is on my brain 24/7. Financial question for you for the upcoming episode. My fiancé and I are getting married on our 10th anniversary this September, so we've been together quite a while. Up until now, we have always kept separate bank accounts and split all of our purchases, rent, bills, groceries, etc. We were students for most of our relationship, and we're now about a year into being full-time working professionals, so now we're finally starting to make a decent income, and therefore starting to notice our growing income gap. We have been talking about officially combining incomes into one account so that splitting expenses isn't so hard on the person who makes less money. But it's been tough to figure out the logistics of this. We both think it's a good idea to each have a kind of spending money amount every month for guilt-free purchases, but that's about the only thing we've decided. Not to mention that it seems weird and a little stressful to think we'll need, or I'll," she put "I'll" in parentheses, "or I'll need to explain my coffee spending. If you have any advice on what works and what doesn't, and some of the common setups for shared accounts, we would love to hear it. Thanks so much."
Good question.
Yeah, I think that's like most people. Huh?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, with the average wedding and the age that we get married, you know, everybody is having their own adult lives before we get married, and so yeah, this is a common question. So I guess, you know, with looking at her question, the first thing that I noticed about it was the language that she was using. Is she's saying, you know, how do we split the bills, or how do we, you know, how is it fair to the person that makes less money? And so my lesson for that is to say that the best thing you can do is to stop thinking about it as my money and his money and start thinking about it as our money. Like, you are a married couple now, and it's hard. I mean, you go from roommate mode to marriage mode, and you know, we've been married for 7 years now, and it's still sometimes we play chicken with the dishes. You know, who's going to get the last clean bowl before one of us actually does the dishes? And so, you know, those little things will still happen, and it's a little bit fun as well. But once you switch to thinking about what's fair for each of us, you really need to start thinking of what's fair for us as a family. You know, what are we bringing in to the accounts? What are we bringing to the family? What do we want? And so, you know, her second part of the question was, how do you set up accounts to make that fair? And like I said before, is that it almost doesn't matter. I mean, if you want to get joint accounts, I would wait until after you're legally married to actually join accounts, because, you know, I'm not an estate lawyer, but I'm sure if something happens to one of you, it would be terribly difficult to figure that stuff out. So legally, once you're married, join accounts after that. But you can still...
Good tip.
Yes. But if you're engaged, you can still use one budgeting app to track everything. Because like I said, the Mint doesn't care where the bank account is and who owns it, it'll just go get the data anyway. So that's not
yes.
So how you set up accounts isn't as big of a deal. But what's more important is that you start thinking of our money instead. Now, I'm really happy that Michelle talked about having that spending money, that fun money, for each of you. That's fantastic. You definitely need to do that, because you don't want every single tiny thing to be a joint decision. That's just going to drive you crazy, and I acknowledge that.
How do people, my wife and I, figure out how much, like, you know, you said you guys don't have expensive habits. You told me it's not like you you don't golf for one, like golfing my husband, that's $100 every Monday if he wants to do it. But how do you, like, is it proportional? Like, I make $50K a year, so I'm gonna give myself $500 a month. Like, how do you even start to say what's quote fair with fun money when they make different, I know it's their money, not individual, but like, you know, that is what she's having an issue with.
How do you figure that out? Yeah. Well, the longer answer is that once you sit down and have a conversation and you have a common goal, whether it's, you know, saving for retirement, buying a house, getting out of debt, whatever, then it really comes down to, well, how much fun can we have without torpedoing those goals? And so the amount can definitely change per couple. My wife and I, you know, we're fine with going to the library and getting books and sitting at home and watching Netflix. We really don't have expensive hobbies. And so we started out as a couple, $50 a month for each of us. But then she was going out to lunch with more friends more often. So she went up to $75 a month, and I was still at 50. Now we're both at 75, and now we're both thinking about maybe going up to 100 because we've both been getting pay raises and things have been going well. So the number can change. It doesn't have to be even, because it really depends upon you as a couple. I was talking with another couple, and the husband really loves reading graphic novels. So it's not just comic books. It's like the nicer graphic novels, and they're a little bit more expensive. So it really depends on you and your hobby, but also your goals. How much fun can you have without ruining the larger goals for the family?
Like saving to buy a house or paying off your... Yeah. So the goals really are the first... That's where you start with couples, and that's where couples need to start with each other.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So, I think a lot of couples, they're like, we should budget because it's a good thing to do. Well, yes, it is a good thing to do, and you should do it. But personally, I feel that I'm not going to stop eating Oreos for no reason. Like, I'm going to stop eating Oreos because I want to lose weight. I want a reason to sacrifice, or a reason to control my eating. Otherwise, I'm just kind of going to do what I want. So if you are thinking about budgeting and you want to get your spouse on board, you know, one of the first things to do is to say, well, what do we as a couple want? And that way it helps us figure out what's the threshold. What can we actually afford, and how much fun can we have without, you know, ruining our bigger goals?
So do you think, like, for in Michelle's case, specifically, she's like, she likes to get her coffee. That's her thing. So like, do you think Michelle and her fiance should be like, okay, well, my thing is like coffee every morning, or morning and my 3 o'clock coffee, or whatever it is,
sure,
or my soy lattes on Saturdays and Sundays, like, and his is, you know, going out for beer Friday night with, you know, with Jim. You know, do you think they should have their own category of, this is Michelle's spending money and this is Michelle's fiance's fun money? And we think, because you said back in the beginning, you know, start a new habit, create a monthly budget. So just for them, if they haven't been tracking already, although you can on your Starbucks app, Michelle, if you have a Starbucks app, just kind of be like, okay, I think I spend, you know, $10 a day.
Yeah, it's kind of trial and error.
Coffee, which many people do, you know, $50 a week times four. Okay, there's $200 a month for Michelle's coffee money. And we'll say Jim's about the same for every Friday night. So should they start out there? But then should they also have, like, my husband and I, we have like a entertainment category.
Yeah.
Where, like, it's us as a family, or him and I,
having,
when we go out on date
night. Date night. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Jinx, they were doing a lot of jinx. So do you think that's a good idea for Michelle to just start with that?
Yeah, it's you know, when Michelle, you know, when you're thinking about your coffee spending, just when you start to think about your fun money, is to say, okay, well, with my coffee habit, if that's going to be $200 a month, so be it. You know, as a coach, I don't mind. As long as it's not ruining the rest of your life, I'm a happy camper. But that's something that you want to talk to your spouse about, your fiance, and to say, okay, well, you know, this is how much I spend eating out and everything else. Can we make it fit? And if you can, go for it. And if he has a lower amount each month, that's fine too, because if, you know, it's not really about what's making it fair for each of you. It's what you want as a family and what you want as a couple.
What about when she says, okay, so I need about $200 for a month for Starbucks. And he goes, whoa. Are you kidding me? You spend $200 a month on friggin' coffee? We can make coffee at home. What do you, mm-hmm. You know, that happens a lot. And it's almost hard to say, like, it might be hard for me to be like, oh shit, I'm spending $200 a month on coffee. But that's important to me. You know, sure. Have you sat through some of these instances where somebody's like, whoa, like that's
yeah,
too
I had
much.
No idea it was that high.
That's just crazy.
It hasn't been quite that extreme, but there was one couple where, you know, she enjoyed retail therapy. There was a particular store, and as a school teacher, you know, she would either on the evenings or on weekends, that was just kind of her thing. To go and relax, and it was her place to go and just enjoy.
It was Target, wasn't it?
It wasn't Target. It might have been Marshall's. My wife, it's definitely Marshall's. But you know, it's just one of those things where it's some place that she can go and that she feels really good. So it's not necessarily about what you're spending the money on. It's more about that threshold is to say, well, I'd like my fund money to be $200 a month. And so when I'm working with a couple, if someone's like, well, what are you spending that on? I try to stop them and say, hey, this is her money that that you're saying it's okay. We're going to put it in the budget, and whatever she spends it on, she spends it on. Because then, of course, then the partner, they can say, well, I get some fun money, and then I just get to spend it on what I get to spend it on.
Strip clubs, sure. Whatever it is.
Well, you know, it's up
to
you guys.
It makes you happy. But this is part of the trial and error that you talked about with this maybe taking 3 or 4 months, being like, well, that was completely unrealistic, or... hey, right. I actually did make some coffee at home, and I think I only need $100 a month for that. But it takes bookkeeping and actually keeping track of receipts, whether you do it on your app or through your credit card or your Starbucks app or whatever. But that that gives me anxiety, the idea of like everything I do is being tracked. So I think part of this is just surrendering to that. Like, you're getting married, you're starting some new habits, and if you really want a budget, you really kind of have to just dig in and face
it's work.
Yeah.
Well, and when it comes to that anxiety of tracking everything, it's going back to the goals. The whole point that you're tracking what you're spending is just to make sure that you're using money for what you want and the goals that you want to go after. So, you know, when you say you're afraid of tracking everything, if you flip your mindset to think, well, I'm tracking it just to make sure I'm not getting into trouble. I'm not tracking it to judge myself or to judge my spouse or for them to judge me or control me. It's really just for us to make sure we're not digging a deeper hole. And you know, the funny thing I like to say is that if you want to stop or if you want to get out of a hole, the first step is to stop digging. And so the reason you want to start tracking is just to answer the question, did we spend more than we made this month? And if we did, you know, what do we want to do about that? And sometimes the answer is less fun money, but sometimes the answer is, oh my gosh, we had all these bank fees that we didn't know about, or maybe there were some late fees that you didn't know about. And it's also, you know, when it comes to that getting used to budgeting, it's also getting used to making mistakes because you're going to not get the budget right. I mean, my wife and I have been doing it every month for over 7 years, and our budget has never gone perfectly right because we're trying to predict the future, and it's not going to be perfect. And so the skill becomes planning ahead, but then when something goes wrong, you know, what are we going to do about it? Let's sit down, have a 5-minute conversation to flip things around, and then you move on. And so it's also to learn to give yourself and your spouse some grace and some room to make mistakes. It's like, okay, well, it happened. So, you know, what did we learn from this, and how are we going to do better next time?
That's good. That's good stuff for those of you contemplating life with another human being with flaws and opinions and all of that. So to speak to weddings, when I looked it up, I found a couple, you know, stat websites, and I found that 72%, or definitely between 65 and 75% of couples do take on debt to pay for their wedding. Whether that's like you borrow some money from your parents, you say you're going to pay it back, or on credit cards, 72% of couples-ish take on debt to pay for their wedding. And to that note, Michelle, you got an email from this company, or?
I did. I got an email on my Allure Consulting, you know, as a wedding planner from, I won't say the name of a company, but it's a loan company,
yeah,
that you hear of, very well known. And basically he's, you know, saying like, we give loans for people to plan to have their weddings. They will give wedding loans of up to $35,000.
Wow, I wonder what the interest rate is.
Well, when I clicked on the link, I mean, it did say it could help you preserve your savings. It gives you a solid emergency fund. I mean, it's all of these things. And it did say that their rates are less expensive than taking out a credit card. But we all know there's all sorts of credit cards and different ways of doing this. And there's also, listen, if you're taking out a loan to plan your wedding, I'm not judging you. You know what I mean? There's different schools of thought. And I used to be the kind of person that would never use a credit card, for example, like, oh no, I can't use a credit card. Now we use them to our benefit, right? We get a credit card. We have a great interest, you know, that gives us airline miles, and we use it instead of our debit card, and we pay it off every month, and we get points and blah, 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 blah. All right. So there's all different ways of doing things, but I thought it interesting, and I thought I would bring it up to you, Dan, and kind of what your thoughts are, with regard to communication when people are planning a wedding, coming up with a budget. I don't know if you listened to our episode on budget. I think you did. You listen to it, Dan?
I'm pretty sure I did. I mean, when there's an episode about budgeting, I want to listen.
Yeah,
to
right.
It.
Yeah,
it was it was breaking down all the typical wedding expenses, but more from a percentage standpoint.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, where you're getting the money.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, most of my clients are either paying for it themselves, or they're getting it from their parents. But when they're paying for it themselves, I don't say, so is that money you saved? I don't ask them, like, did you take out a loan? Are you using a credit card? I don't know.
Are you sure you want to do that? Are you okay doing that? It's a wedding.
Are you okay with paying me? I mean, is that
I'm just like, how much money can we spend? I'm not going to ask where it came from. What do you think, Dan?
Well, I guess the longer answer is that I talk about this in my ultimate guide, and it's how I teach my couples, is I really love the zero-based budgeting model of keeping track of money, which is, if you're not familiar, is that every dollar that comes into your life, it has some sort of mission, it has some sort of plan. You're either saving it, you're spending it, you're investing it, you're doing something with it. And what that does is it just creates a nice boundary to your month. So if you're bringing in $5,000 for the month of April, where do you want all that $5,000 to go? Because some of it's going to go to bills, some of it's going to go maybe to saving for retirement or putting it in an emergency fund, some of it's going to go to your fund money. And when you create that boundary, you create also a zero-sum game. So going back to paying for the wedding, if you're going to take out that $30,000 loan and they've got a certain interest rate, they're going to give you a monthly payment. They're going to say, okay, you're going to owe us so much per month to pay this off. So when you take your budget, you can say, okay, well, if it's going to be, you know, $400 a month, if we want to say yes to that $400 a month, we've got to say no to $400 a month somewhere else. Because if we can make that trade-off, if we can say yes to that and no to something else, and we still have a balanced budget, then you aren't digging deeper into a hole, and you get your wedding using that loan. And so it's, you know, the financial world, you know, if you're a CFO for a company, we're talking about cash flow. And not to get too deep into the weeds on that, but the idea is to say, well, when that money comes in, what are you going to do with it to help you as a family and to make you a better couple? But it also, when you bring it to that monthly number, then it helps you figure out, okay, what are we trading off to get this? If we want to say yes, and as a coach, if you want to say yes, I'm cool with it. But what else are you going to say no to in order to make that happen? And if you can't make it happen, then you might want to look towards either you go deeper into debt and you're just okay with it, or or you go find other options to pay for the wedding.
Okay.
That makes sense.
So because I might say, hey, I can, you know, we're going to get married in, you know, in 9 months. And I can really afford to, from now until who knows how many years, I can afford to put $400 away, but I'm not going to necessarily have my entire budget in 9 months. So, you know, I'll do this loan and I'll be okay paying that amount every month. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and what you find in, you know, the debt trap that a lot of people fall into is that that monthly number keeps going up and up and up. And then if you're paying that every month for years on end, it ties up that money every month that you can't say yes to anything else for. And so that's where you start to hate debt and you start, okay, I'm tired of this student loan. I'm tired of this other stuff. And then, but that also fuels your energy to say, okay, well, if we want to get rid of this debt or if we want to save for vacation, if we can figure out what that monthly number is, then it's easier for us to say, can we afford this? Or what can we say no to say yes to this other goal that we have?
And to accelerate something if there is a time limit, like you are saving for a vacation or for a wedding. My cousin just got engaged, and when they were thinking about a wedding date, there was like a 9-month swing either way. And ultimately, they chose like the farthest date possible. And that was largely because they both wanted to be able to save more money because they decided sort of... surprisingly, that they wanted a far more expensive venue than they had initially thought. And so it really was a logical decision. Oh, well, that venue is going to cost $8,000 more than we thought, but we both have jobs and we both, you know, are still on our parents' health insurance for now. So now is the time to just sock money away. And the way they're going to do that is by going out for drinks less often and, you know, like culling their social life a little bit. But the goal is this amazing venue. So it's always nice to have like a goal that you're both on the same page for that you're excited about.
Yes.
And then.
Yes. Yeah, you're working as a team.
A little easier to save money when you know what it's going to get you in the end.
Right. And what you also find is that a lot of times that trade-off is sometimes it's just time for money. And so if they say, okay, well, we're just going to have the wedding later. We're cool with that because it allows us to afford this bigger venue. And so that trade-off sounds a little bit more like they just traded time for money rather than getting married sooner and having the venue that they didn't want. And yeah, that's a wonderful decision to make.
I'll let her know it has your stamp of approval.
Wonderful.
So speaking of your stamp of approval or your way of thinking about this stuff, please do plug the guide that you've mentioned a couple times, because we will include a link to it and just tell us a little bit about what that will help people with.
Yeah. So it's how to talk to your spouse about money. I call it an ultimate guide. It's over 20,000 words. And so it's not just a quick little 10-point blog post. I mean, this has chapter numbers in it, for goodness sakes. And so with that, not only does it have the conversation that you should have starting out talking about your goals, but it also talks about how to turn those goals into those monthly numbers. And once you have those monthly numbers, how do you start budgeting on a regular basis? When do you do what? Who does what? So if you can go to my website, it's adultingwithmoney.com. And I have a special link for the big wedding planning podcast listeners. It's adultingwithmoney.com/bigwedding. And if you go to that link, it goes straight to the guide that you can download a free PDF copy. But it also comes with an extra free gift, is to say, well, once you have listened to this episode and you've read the guide and you're on board and you want to get started, how do you actually sit down with your partner and have that first conversation? And so that you get that free gift as well.
Awesome.
Very, very good. Thank you. If we get questions after this, after listeners have listened, because sometimes we get emails that are like, I just listened to your episode all about whatever, and I have a very specific question that you didn't address. Can we forward them and then report back sporadically?
Yeah, absolutely. Needed? I'd love to help in any way that I can.
You'll be our resident finance guy, finance guru. We're into naming things around here.
I know.
Okay, that's all right.
Okay, awesome. Michelle, any other questions?
Oh, man. Well, no, I think I just want to say that the way that we had Dr. Fossey and other experts, but for me, like, I think this goes hand in hand with like setting up, you know, and how to communicate and speak with your partner going forward. And I've talked about this before, how important it is not to ignore things, not to let things go, not to just hope and, you know, cross your fingers it's going to work out okay. This is one of those areas that you guys should be communicating on constantly, not assuming that he or she is on the same page as you, and talk openly, you know, just get it out. Just say, I need $200 a month for coffee. I just need this. Okay. And you're going to have to help me out. You know, you're a team. So communicate, set this stuff up in advance. This is something my husband and I didn't do because we were like, we were in our 20s. You know, when we got together, we didn't even think about retiring. I mean, who thinks about retiring in their 20s? You probably did, Dan, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. It was kind of my job, so okay. I thought about it pretty
all
early.
All right. Well, anyway, all I'm saying is this is super important, you guys. So sit down maybe this weekend, just like we said before, with your favorite cocktail or tea. If you're on a cleanse like me, it won't be alcohol. And I'm right there with you, buddy. And start a conversation. Start a dialogue. Listen to this episode and download Dan's guide. That's awesome that it's free, by the way.
Because Michelle and I know a lot about weddings. And we love to talk about weddings. But we've also been married for a while. And we're, you know, at an age where a lot of our peers have been married. And if we know one thing for sure, it is that marriage is a lot harder than weddings. So whatever, like she said, don't let things go or fester or just cross your fingers that something's just magically going to get easier after the wedding day, because I am 99% sure that it's not going to get easier, and in fact it might get a little bit harder. And we want to we want you to be able to set yourself up for success post wedding. The wedding is just like a welcome party to the rest of your life together. And we love them, but they're not the end-all be-all. Marriage, you know, can be, and it should be. This is something you're saying you're going to do for life. So setting the foundation here is important.
Yeah, it's even in those old school vows, you know, for richer, for poorer. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
A lot of couples take that part out.
I know. Why? Why?
Because they're writing their own and they forget about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I always talk over you, and I always miss some of the funny things you say. I notice that when I'm editing.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, everything I say when you're talking over me is the funniest thing you ever would have heard.
I know it, damn it.
All right, Dan, anything to put a bow on it for us?
Yeah.
I guess the bow that I can think of is, you know, I'm a huge fan of stand-up comedy. And if you've ever seen The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon Prime, if you haven't, go watch that. But in that show, you get to watch Mrs. Maisel perform a joke, or she perfects the joke. And it takes her 1, 2, 3 times. And the first time she does it, it doesn't really get a laugh. The second time, it gets a bigger laugh. And the third time, she tweaks it again, and it gets a huge laugh. And that's a lot how budgeting goes. Is it can be a lot more creative than you think. I mean, it works great for left-brain people because it's numbers and all that stuff. But for right-brain people and the creative people, it takes some time. The first budget, it's going to be terrible. And that's okay. That's normal. And you just kind of see how it goes. And then the second one, you just tweak it because you don't have to reinvent it. You just tweak it and you try it again and you tweak it a third time. And you do get used to it and it does get easier. And the conversations around money get easier. But you've got to have the patience to try it. And you've got to have the patience to make some mistakes yourself and let your partner make some mistakes and fix them as you go.
Yeah. So if you are doing this successfully, not only will you be on your way to financial freedom as it is, but it will also be a hilarious adventure with comic highs and lows.
That's absolutely
is how to circle it back, y'all. So good luck. Please let us know how it's going. Michelle and I love to hear about how specific episodes or specific pieces of advice might have helped you along your way, and we'll pass it all on to Dan as well.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle C., for that great question for Dan. Thank you, Dan, for being on our show and getting in touch with us. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. This was a lot of fun, so if you get more questions coming in, let me know, and I'll help the best that I can.
Did we already say how to get a hold of Dan?
I don't know, but I'll say it again. The best place for me is going to my website, adultingwithmoney.com. It's got a contact form. You can email things straight to me. But of course, if you want the guide, again, that's adultingwithmoney.com/bigwedding, and that'll take you straight to it.
Very good. We'll awesome. Include that in show notes. So thank you very much. And with that, I'll go to our outro. Is that what we call it?
Yes.
Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast on iTunes. And if you love us, rate and review us. Make our day. Twitter is TBWP Podcast. We have Instagram and Facebook, both at the Big Wedding Planning Podcast. And you can email us, thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com. You can support us and show us how much you love us on our Patreon page. And if you want to call and leave a voice message, maybe we'll play it. We'll definitely listen to it.
And our phone number to leave us a message is area code 415-723-1625.
Very good. Well, thank you. Thank you to Dan and thank you, Michelle. I'll talk to you later.
I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Happy planning, everybody.
Bye.